This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 558, brought to you by Warby Parker. Visit warbyparker.com/iFanboy to begin your free home try-on experience today. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 558. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And it's got a little scratchy there.
I lost my voice in the middle of that. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Hello. We haven't done that in a while.
Hello.
We do jokes from the 30s.
we're doing vaudeville.
We'll keep going further back.
I know. That's an Our American Cousin joke. We are iFanboy. I actually told one of those the other day. We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read our stack of comics and one of us picks their favorite book and we call that the pick of the week. We will talk about that book. We will talk about other books, increasingly larger amounts of other books every week and other stuff that happens. Read some mail. What we aim for here is entertainment. Also, not sounding like morons. Those are our platforms.
We promise nothing.
It's what we stand for.
Yeah.
It's not what we believe in.
No.
But it's what we stand for.
Here is your spoiler warning. We will imitate other shows and make old references. This is a review show also, so there will be spoilers in the things that we're talking about, which means, do I have to define spoiler? Because I feel like that's the point we're at.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
There you go.
They have the internet. So
you're warned. You know. Connor, you had to pick.
Pick of the week was Hadrian's Wall number 2 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Alex Siegel, and art by Rod Rice, who did all of the art. Did the drawing, the inking, the coloring. He's a three-man wrecking crew. So, odd that we're not talking about a number 1 issue from Image. We're talking about a number 2 issue. Hadrian's Wall number 1, it might have come out when we were doing that all-email show. I don't remember. This seems too long ago.
No, we talked about it on the show. It was the episode when we were all together, I believe.
Yes, we mentioned it in passing. Anyway, I really liked number 1. I thought number 2 was better. I had a lot of great books this week, but the book that I kept coming back and thinking about and the one I was most looking forward to reading the next issue of was Hadrian's Wall number 2. One of the things we've been talking a lot about in the show is the genre mashups and how you know, we can't get a fantasy book without an alien in it, or a crime book without a werewolf. But this is also a genre mashup that I don't necessarily mind. It's a sci-fi book ostensibly, but it's really a crime book. There's a murder mystery set in space.
But the thing is that, like, I feel like if it was like, you know, it's a space station with werewolves, that's like the extreme genre mashup. But like, this is a crime, a murder happened on a ship. And so this could happen in the future. So like, I think this is why it's less offensive.
Yeah, I don't even think
it's not
about
a mashup
it.
With another like
genre
supernatural thing.
Right.
And the investigator's a wizard. You know, like that's not happening here.
Oh, wait, I thought he was a wizard.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler.
So I like that. I mean, you know, might as well do a crime book in a spaceship. Why not? It's a fun little locked room mystery, right? There's only so many suspects you got when your ship is in space. So in the first issue, we got the setup. There was a body floating outside the ship. It was one of the crew members. And yeah, you're right. We did talk about this book. Now it's coming back to me.
We were literally sitting across from each other while you talked about it.
I blocked that out. So there was a body sitting floating outside the ship. And an investigator was sent from Earth to basically rubber stamp the accidental death of this crew member, but he has quickly found out that, in fact, it was a murder. And to complicate matters, the dead body is the new husband of his ex-wife, who is also on the ship.
And his former friend. Like, he was friends with the dude before he stole his wife, yeah.
So this issue is mostly spent interrogating who I guess we'll call the suspects, all the different crew members, the doctor, the captain, you know, the sort of grizzled veteran, the scientist with a secret past. I mean, you're basically getting the laundry list of possible suspects. And I just really liked the conversations, but I also liked the device of having these long panels with headshots, and then he would ask a question at the end, and he would flip the page, and it was to the next suspect. I thought it was really well done. I liked the characters a lot. I like this main guy who's also. Another complication is the investigator is a drug addict. He's hooked on pain pills, but somebody has flushed all of his pills in the night. So he's out of his drugs.
I feel like there's a couple of points where this investigator might not be the best person for this job.
He's a little unstable.
And now,
well, they don't want him to actually investigate. They want him to just come up and literally stamp it and say we're done and go back home. But he won't do that.
Yeah, I mean the pill problem, you know, that's a secret, and that's, you know, not many people know about it. But I feel like the fact that the victim is his former friend and ex-wife's new husband is like, let's find somebody else to cover this crime.
But I thought he and his wife were good together. I think this is a good. There's a lot of good dynamics going on here.
When I saw you pick this, for a moment, I was like, really? Issue number two? And then I read it, and then I was like, oh, I know why. This is purely because we haven't gotten a new Expanse book yet.
Possibly.
For those who don't know, both Connor and I are extremely addicted to the Expanse series of books, which is now a television show with Thomas Jane, and it takes place on a spaceship, and it's all very stuff. I get, and this isn't exactly like it, but I definitely get echoes of the "this is just life in the future on a spaceship," and you know, and murders happen, and investigations happen, and I want to know more about how the ship works and what world this is. But yeah, really, really interesting.
And what they were doing, what the Hadrian's Wall, which is the name of the ship, what it's doing out there, what is going on there?
Just what are you doing out there?
Who wants the investigation covered up? This shadowy person in a hoodie or a cowl or something, some sort of shadowy person is dealing with this guy's supervisor. And at the end, say, you know, they flushed his pills. They're trying to squash the investigation. The question is why?
Right. And what I want to know is who is Hadrian and what is up with his wall?
It's almost like all those titles of the Expanse books that don't make much sense.
Exactly.
So, but I also want to talk about Rod Reiss, is his name?
Yeah, Rod Reiss, yep.
He's really good.
He's really, really good.
He has a very unusual comic book style. I love the face of the doctor, the Russian doctor. He's very sort of a... You don't see that kind of face in a comic book.
Yeah, and I really like the he reminds me of Ariel Olivetti at times.
Yeah.
And that's purely in the, you know, kind of the anatomy and the almost, you know, squarish jaws and all that sort of stuff. And I think that this book is really like unlike anything else on the stands to look at. But at times I struggled with this particular issue, even compared to the first issue. I went back to look at the first issue because sometimes it comes off very stiff and in some of these conversations, I would like to see a little more emoting. Mm-hmm. And you know, as opposed to just these blank stares on the characters, but all in all, it's very engaging in terms of just a look that is not like anything else that's out there.
Ron, in the future, we're all on mood tranquilizers.
Oh,
in the future?
Yeah. Everyone's Botox and on mood tranquilizers. No, I think this is a consequence of the sort of painterly style. You saw that in you see it sometimes early Olivetti. You saw it in early. What's his name? The artist we really like, who only draws pinups. Who used to only draw pinups and now draws interiors.
J. Scott Campbell.
No, never mind.
Let's go for Richards. The Thor guy.
No, it doesn't matter. I can't remember things anymore. It's just what happens.
Yeah, that must make the show good. I've literally heard their just cognitive powers fading.
The guy who drew the Black Widow series before the current one.
I have no recollection of that.
Black Widow series before the current one.
Yes.
Who wrote it?
I don't know.
Wait, give me more. I want to play this game. Keep playing this game.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, let's go.
Okay,
with it.
He drew that series that Jerry Duggan wrote that was basically The Odyssey.
Oh, Phil Noto.
Phil Noto.
Oh, yes. Phil Noto. Yeah, okay.
It kind of reminds me of the stiffness in early Phil Noto.
I forgot about that Black Widow series.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't. If I was describing Phil Noto, I don't think I would go to Black Widow.
That's the most recent thing I've read of his.
Yeah. Photorealistic.
He did Chewbacca. He did Chewbacca.
I don't read Chewbacca.
Oh, right. All right. Yeah, there it is.
Those amazing pinups of just like the Fantastic Four in the 60s.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, his early work, we discussed this before. His early work was much different than it was now. And yes, I think that's a consequence of this kind of style. Anyway, I like the look of this book. It's a very unusual book. You tend to get stock character faces in comics, and these faces are very different. Good art style. I mean, I like the design of the ship. I think everything about this is intriguing right now, and I like a good murder mystery. It's sort of like Murder on the Orient Express, but murder in a giant freighter ship. And it's fun.
Yeah. It's good. It's like I said earlier, it's unlike anything else that's out there. And if you're looking for good sci-fi, like, it's funny because like I love science fiction and I love this kind of science fiction, which is where the science fiction is just the fact that it's in the future and we're in space and these all these kind of things. And then we just see like what happens in the real world
around
it. But
it's not about that. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's just about life.
That's just a setting. Yeah. That's just a setting. Yeah. So.
Which is good. So I if you like crime stories, I definitely should check this out. Hadrian's Wall, number two.
And you'd mentioned Black Widow.
Yes.
And a new issue of Black Widow came out from Chris Somney and Mark Waid.
We haven't talked about this book in a while.
Yeah, because I don't really care.
Interesting.
For it.
Yeah. I don't really connect with the story, but I thought this issue particularly is one of the better ones. And we dealt with. See, the problem is. I don't really care about this lion character, but we get his backstory here, in which he was a kid who his family was brutally murdered by a young Natasha. And I just thought that scene, the flashback scene where she very coldly stabs the guy, the dad and the other kid to death in the car. Dead eyes and the shik. It was very disturbing. That's probably the most visceral scene of the week.
It's funny because I was reading this issue and I've been reading this whole run because it's, you know, Mark Waid and Chris Somney. They did so great on Daredevil and, you know, we've been huge Somney fans for years, right? And I was really I spent a couple hours thinking about why this series isn't connecting to me on any interest level at all. And I don't know if it's the fact that Waid and Somney are co-plotting it or, you know, I'm just not particularly, you know, like I don't have a strong affinity for Black Widow as a character, and maybe it's just numbness to the greatness of Somney, but I don't see any sequences jumping out and blowing my mind or anything like that. It just kind of like is very, okay, like when we finish this up and get to the next thing. And I wonder if that's a sign of sometimes good creative teams sometimes need to not work together for a little bit.
Or you know that a property isn't, you know, it's not bad. I think we've all experienced the same amount of ennui about it. It's not bad. Like it's a fine story, but I actually feel like I was more invested in the previous version of this with Noto and Edmondson to a certain extent. I know that Somney is actually writing, I think, the bulk of this.
Yeah,
like you'll know his name comes first.
Yep.
And I don't know if that's it or he's like concentrating more on that part of it. So it sort of takes a little of the oomph away from the art. I'm totally guessing on it. But it might just be that they're, you know, like this, it's not connecting with this character in the same way. And I think one of the things is that you're trying to sell this character because she's super popular because of the movies. But this version of her
is not the movie version.
Yeah, it doesn't really make me think of that, which normally that's a good thing. But maybe in this it isn't. I don't know.
It's pretty dark. If you're a fan of the character coming into this book and you pick it up, it's all about how she was a horrible person and murdered people and the effect of that. That's an interesting story on the one hand. On the other hand, it's a hard sell when you're trying to popularize the character.
It's almost more interesting to just know of in the background of a current story, though.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like when you tell this story and you get it done, and we're how many issues in now?
Seven,
you know, but then you give current. I just couldn't get back to the cover. But then you get back to the current sort of version of it, knowing that, and I think that does make it interesting. But wallowing in here for a while, maybe too long.
Ron, I will disagree and say that the 4-page sequence, the 5-page sequence that opens the book, is really, I think, an artistic tour de force.
And I don't really disagree, but that's why I wonder if I'm just numb to the greatness of Somni at this point. You know, like it's the chew problem where just like it's so good that I come to expect it, so I need it to be, you know, exploding off the page to wow me. You know what I mean? Which is really not fair and is a disservice to Chris because he's just so good and it just you know. Singularly better than the majority. You know, it's in the upper percentile of all the art that we see on a daily basis.
But. That page where he blows up the guy's head too is real good.
Yeah. The girl, the old headmistress.
No, they're talking to a guard trying to get information out of him, and he's in his head.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
Walk
yes,
away.
Yes,
the
yes,
head
yes,
explodes
yes.
in the background.
Yes.
It's quite
the body
cartoony.
Language. But you know, when he's like,
that one.
This is a great looking book, Ron, you grump.
But it doesn't excite any of us, though.
No, the story doesn't excite me. The art still does.
Yeah. But is that enough?
That we're all still reading it in a world full of choices.
All right, fair enough.
I would prefer this. We're all like, another story.
We've given them a lot of rope, basically, because they are who they are.
I think the disappointing thing is that we're at issue 7, traditionally the start of a new arc, and we're still going with this other. Mm-hmm. story, and I don't really care about this dude.
I mean, I'm not wrong. There's something that's not grabbing us like how Daredevil grabbed us, right?
Correct. Even that started to lose everybody.
Daredevil got long in the tooth.
Not everybody, but us.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do we feel about the device on the cover of putting a giant number one for the new storyline?
Well, they've been doing that for years. I mean, that's, you know.
No, but they're using a new iconography now.
Right, yeah, it's the new Marvel Now exploding Marvel Now. Whatever. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care.
So. But it does make it harder to identify when there actually is a new number one. like when infamous Iron Man launched today and or not today, this week. And I was just like, wait, okay, so is this which Iron Man is this?
I did the same.
Yeah. But
it's a new Iron Man, but it's not really because it's just Iron Man with a one.
Yeah. So infamous Iron Man number one from Bendis and Maleev, who are, as we know, a great team.
I don't want you – before you get into your rant.
I'm not ranting.
You're not going to rant?
No.
I assumed you were going to rant about this.
Why?
Because it was better when I read it with Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus doing it?
No, because it spoiled the end of Civil War II.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody said that, and I forgot about it, and now I don't remember what it was.
It's the reason why Dr. Doom is the new Iron Man is because Tony Stark dies at the end of Civil War II.
Oh,
right.
Is that it? Is that
that's what it says in this issue.
Okay, so here's what is weird about that. So every time they talked about Tony being dead, part of the previous storyline was that he had faked his own death to check something out in Japan. I thought that's what they were referring to.
No, this was saying at the end of his fight with his friends or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah. No, and I knew about that, and I guess I kind of dismissed it because, A, I haven't I don't know how Civil War II ends, so I'm not. I'm willing. Yeah, I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'll see how Civil War II ends to then make the judgment on it. But for this particular case, I was able to just, you know, ignore that and read this as a story of, okay, Tony's not around, Doom is talking to his AI thing, and okay, let's go.
I loved this issue.
I thought it was good. I didn't think it was awful. I thought it was really good.
I loved the Maleev art. I thought this was top Maleev.
Yeah. The really only thing about these new couple of Iron Man books that I've been enjoying lately is the Doctor Doom aspect.
Right.
Because he was really the part that was new and refreshing and interesting. Because Doom kept coming in and Tony was like, I hate you. Why are you here? Leave me alone. But he was acting like a completely different character, which is interesting because it's like an offshoot from Battle World, which might be a thing, maybe. Which is at least it left something on the table that was interesting.
Yeah, this is still spilling out of Secret War.
Yeah.
You know, he's still that Doom coming out of he's the neutered Doom.
Neutered?
Neutered Doom. Which I feel like is the second choice for the name of this book. Neutered Doom.
Yeah.
Neutered Doom.
I thought the Maleev art looked great. I love the way he draws Dr. Doom's old classic armor in the flashback sequence. You know, you're right. This is the same idea as the Spider-Man book. What was the name of it?
Ron? Superior Spider-Man.
Superior Spider-Man. Superior Spider-Man. Yep. But Doom is such a great character that I almost just don't care. Because I like the idea of seeing how Doom will try to be a hero amongst the other heroes. Because none of them are going to trust him. His name is Dr. Doom.
Yeah, he didn't even change his coloring on the armor, so
he's on point brand wise.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta imagine that this is an exact. I mean, because Superior Spider-Man had a little more nuance in terms of it was Doc Ock taking over Peter's body and nobody knowing it was Doc Ock in his head,
right?
And so there was a little more. Sure. There was where this is just very blatantly it's Dr. Doom in Iron Man armor. So there's a little bit of a nuance there. But yeah, but conceptually it's bad guy becomes good guy story. But I'm willing to go with it. I mean, like, the Maleev art was great. I thought. I mean, whatever Maleev is doing lately is working for me. And so I'll take it. You know, and him and Bendis working together I'll happily revisit that creative team. So I'm willing to go for this adventure. I'm going to stick with this. Ratings.
Green Lantern's number 9. I really liked a lot. I thought it was interesting to see a character that was basically the anti Hal Jordan, the guy who was always in second place to the other Green Lantern. So he was a test pilot who wasn't as good as Hal Jordan and had to have his ass saved by him, and then he decided, oh, what I really want to be is a Green Lantern. I don't know that you can just decide you want to be one and then assume you're going to be one, but I guess
if you have issues, you will.
But then he dedicates his life to becoming a Green Lantern, and then the moment comes when the ring's going to pick him and decides, you know what, no, we're going to go with Simon Baz, and it leaves him. And then I thought this was a really fun.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say is that, like, this actually. If this was my week, this was really in the running for my pick of the week.
This was
purely because up to this point, Green Lanterns has just been okay. Like, it started off strong with this Rebirth issue, but I haven't really loved the Simon Jessica teaming, and there's just been a lot of ennui in those, like, oh, am I good enough? And like, right. How do we be partners? And it just kind of has been the same thing. This was something completely different, completely unexpected, and the concept of somebody who early on, like, one of the first people Hal saves is Green Lantern, and then idolizes Green Lantern, wants to be one, and then to see, like, I gotta give Sam Humphries credit for coming up with this and having the iteration of I'll be the next Green Lantern, and then seeing, oh, there's another one. Oh, there's another one. Why not me? And then have the moment happen and have the ring be like, you possess great power. And then the ring's like, nope, error. No, not you. And leaves. And I was like, oh man, that's brutal. And so, like, talk about a great character setup. This echoed the great early Geoff Johns Green Lantern setups when we saw the pieces being put on the board. And so, yeah, so this totally redrew me into Green Lanterns. I was getting ready to drop this title.
Interesting.
And so, like, now I'm totally on board because I just loved what he did with this character. So
this is a super fun issue. But am I supposed to believe that somehow in the 5 years of this Earth, they also did Justice League International?
Yeah, right.
It's not because, you know, he's as you said, he Guy Gardner shows up and they show a panel showing the Justice League International. I was like, well, come on.
It could have been a couple of months.
We've had the same team. The Justice League itself hasn't even changed membership since they formed. Yeah. It's the same seven people. You're telling me at some point Fire and Ice and Rocket Red showed up?
Listen, like, Connor, the world of DC Rebirth is that we can have our cake and eat it too. So that totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. I'm not surprised by it at all.
This is a great villain. I like villains who are born from jealousy of heroes. So this will be a good villain for Hal Jordan or the other Green Lanterns or whoever.
Really good device. Really well done.
Yes.
So to keep, I wasn't ranting about Infamous Iron Man because I was saving the rant for Death of X number two, which continues the train wreck of Jeff Lemire and Charles Soule trying to explain what the hell happened to the X-Men. And, you know, again, Aaron Cooter killing it on art. That's the reason to be reading this. But all I'm going to say is that Death of X number two finally gives us the scene we've all been waiting for the past year or so, the scene that we've all been waiting for when Storm and some other X-Men team up with Crystal and some other Inhumans and literally fight a cloud. The thing we joked about actually happened in this issue, where a bunch of mutants and Inhumans stand on a cliff and try to hold back a cloud from hitting Spain.
Well, it's a Terrigen cloud. It's a dangerous cloud. There's a reason.
They fought a cloud.
It's an environmental disaster they're trying to stop.
It's like Superman stopping a river or a dam from breaking.
Literally, listen. Picture someone in the air punching the air. No, you cloud, you stay away. Like, it's just like.
You remember that movie with Russell Crowe, The Insider?
Yes.
There's a really tense faxing scene in that.
Right, yes. Very similar to the faxing scene.
Or in Last of the Mohicans, there's a canoe chase.
It's
funny when you take that music away.
I wonder why they don't just funnel the cloud into space.
Well, no, because the Inhumans want the cloud.
Into a container of some sort. Like,
it's this whole thing.
They
is
not
so,
have a big vacuum because you could just
like a big Green Lantern Green Lantern space vacuum.
Yeah.
Right.
Was it Mega Maid?
Mega Maid Spaceballs. Yeah. But the thing about this is that this is so, it just reads carelessly and rushed and editorially driven and just like it. And I know they've got to do this to move on, but like Lemire and Saul don't get Cyclops. The way this characterization is such a bastardization of what that character has been, and even the direction Bendis was taking them on.
I don't know. I think you don't like the way Cyclops has been for the last 5 years. I get that, but this is consistent with that Cyclops.
No, I think it's not. I think it's somebody who thinks that they get it and they don't.
Hashtag not my Cyclops.
Yep, how long does it take Medusa to shower?
A long time.
It's not the showering that's a problem.
It's the drying.
And then drain maintenance.
It's the shampoo costs as well. I mean, how many bottles per shower? She must need 50 bottles of shampoo.
Their septic system has got to be a wreck.
The one in human has just got to clean her trap.
Trap is just, the little drain trap is just not fun. To go in the shower after her,
she got in before me.
This is high-end comedy coming from the iFanboy group today.
Knee-deep in red hair.
So, I mean, as much as I hate Death of X, I just want this to move along because this whole past week we've been inundated with teasers of new series to come, and it's nice to see. I'm at least intrigued as what they're going to go, what direction they're going to take the X-Men books, because clearly what's been happening up to now isn't working.
How long did it take for you to not read this?
Nothing. I mean, what are you offering?
I'm just curious.
Yeah. Sandwich. You want to know if something could happen. I don't think Marvel will bribe you.
No.
Because the fact is, even if you sit here and talk badly about it, you're going to get more people to read the book than not read the book.
Right.
So it's all good for them.
Right, yeah. And also they don't care either way.
What if I offered you a sandwich?
Well, what kind of sandwich?
A pastrami sandwich from Katz's.
Nope. I don't like pastrami.
It's delicious.
Yeah, have you had that? Pastrami.
I've had it. It's just not my favorite. That's all.
I don't even like pastrami, but let's, that's next level.
No, I do. Lots of respect for the Katz's. All right.
Speaking of Cyclops and eyepieces, this episode is brought to you by Warby Parker. I wear glasses. I don't know if you know that. I have been called by noted comic book creator Robert Kirkman glasses because he didn't know my name. But it can be like annoying when your glasses are sort of starting to go and you're like, oh, I have to go through all that again. And it's really expensive even if you have insurance. So Warby Parker's
a very good solution for that. I use this myself. I have before, so I was very happy to speak to it. They don't have a middleman. They sell directly to customers online and in their stores in certain cities. And Warby Parker is able to provide a high quality, great looking eyewear at a fraction of the usual price, meaning that they all start at $95, which if you've ever bought glasses, again, even with insurance, $95 is absurd. And that includes the frame, the lens, and the coating. So there's an anti-reflective coating, and UV coating, all that stuff that you always have to pay extra for. That is super helpful, especially that anti-reflective one, by the way.
So now, Josh, I don't wear glasses, but I've heard the experience of buying from Warby Parker is fun. Is that true?
It is. So you might think you got to go to a store, do the whole thing. But what you do is you go on their website. They've got all of the glasses sort of laid out. You can go through them. You can pick 5 pair and have them sent to your home for a home try on. You get them in the mail, and that's free, by the way. And, you know, basically I just show them to my wife, and she goes, I don't like that one. I like that. I don't like that one. And then I go, no, I like
that.
Is
she talking about your face?
I mean, ultimately, yes, it's my face. So you get the glasses back. You have 5 days to try them on. You can take pictures of them, put them up on the internet. I've seen this. We make a little collage and then have people publicly vote on them. You can use hashtags for that, apparently. That's one way to do it. You can just show them to everybody, live with them, put them on your face a little while, see how it goes. So that's how you can try them on. If that doesn't work, order 5 more. You can get it right. It's pretty good. So when you find the ones you like, you go over to warbyparker.com/ifanboy. That's key. You can order your favorite pair. Even if you don't have your prescription, as long as it's valid, they'll call your doctor. So you don't have to send it in. So to go to warbyparker.com, which is warbyparker.com/ifanboy, and you get started with your free home try-on, and you will find your perfect glasses today. Now, I've done this before. My glasses, my main glasses that I wear and have worn for almost about 3 years, which are still fine, going strong, are Warby Parker. I've just ordered another couple of pair that are coming this way. They were supposed to be here today, but the mail hadn't arrived before showtime. But I really like the service. I was planning on using it again very shortly anyway before this ad came up, and I still did. I've ordered the home try-on a bunch of times and sort of narrowed down what I liked. I found some new ones this time. I had a harder time picking which one I liked the most rather than not being able to find one. And if you know me, I'm a picky SOB. So that's sort of a thing.
And by making it so easy and free and taking the risk out of it and the free shipping, mm-hmm. Plus you don't have to leave your house, which I know you like, Josh.
I really am a
deal
big
of people.
Fan of
that. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
seriously, if you go into so what happens around here is that we've got these glasses stores and you go in and there's always one lady there and she's like, "Do you like anything?" And I'm looking around going, "I don't like anything. I don't like any of this." So it actually gives you a lot more options than you usually get. I think all the glasses in the stores around here are either Oakley or Nike for some reason because they just think, "Well, men like sports," or they look like, you know, somebody from the Wonder Years. And these are not that. These are nice and hip and cool. And there's lots of, you know, little variations depending on your face, how big you want them or how wide or anything. So it's been really good. Big fan. So you can go to warbyparker.com/ifanboy to order your free home try on today. Choose 5 frames you'd like to try on. Mail those frames back. Choose your favorite pair. Have your prescription added to the order. And then Warby Parker makes your experience completely risk-free with free shipping all around. Visit warbyparker.com/ifanboy to begin your free home trial today.
And we thank them for their support of my family.
Very much. It's a really easy plug to do.
Yeah, that was great. It's like, Josh, don't you use Warby Parker? You're like, I do. I'm like, great, let's do it. So warbyparker.com/ifanboy.
Thanks, glasses.
All right. moving on. Back to the program. Archie number 13. Mark Waid again in our rundown.
Ron, have you dropped off this book, I assume?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. It's been okay. Mark Waid, you know, he's a great writer. He writes interesting stories. It's been an interesting variation on Archie. Every once in a while, it does feel like a middle-aged man writing teenagers, but it's still fun.
Ah!
In this issue, Veronica has been sent off to Switzerland boarding school because her father lost the mayoral election, so he's punishing the town and punishing Archie. And she runs into Cheryl Blossom, who acts more like Veronica. The one big problem I have with this book is that Veronica, not much like Dr. Doom, has been neutered. She's not really mean, and she's not the Veronica you remember from the old comics. So Cheryl Blossom has sort of taken that spot. She's a very, very mean girl in the boarding school. Also, Archie may be mentally ill. He's been imagining Veronica all around town.
Oh my God! If they were going to take this in the direction of Archie actually has a dissociative personality disorder, that would be fantastic. Archie's schizophrenic.
Possibly. I mean, he's playing his guitar and imagining her right there next to her singing, and then she's not, so who knows?
Wow. Well, he just loves
crossing my fingers.
All right, one can hope.
So I want to talk about Mockingbird number 8 by Chelsea Kane and Kate Nimchick, I think. This is the last issue of the series. It got canceled. And as I was reading it, I was like, oh, this is totally the last issue of the series. Because it was awesome. Like, oh, yeah? in such a way that, like, they just put all of this stuff into it. A lot of it was experimental. Like, the whole thing is not necessarily my complete aesthetic, but it was a really interesting and cool issue because it was like they had nothing to lose. So for some reason, you've got Mockingbird is on a cruise in Bermuda, and the Phantom Rider, who she'd had an affair with, who is also a ghost who is stalking her, is trying to get her back, but she's also a ghost. And she beats him with the help of all of the nerds who are cosplaying on this, like, nerd cruise. And then there's a flowchart in the middle, a very detailed flowchart about how to beat your ghost cowboy stalker ex. And then at the end, there is like a threesome in the Swiss Alps with Clint and some other guy, sort of implied there.
Whoa.
And it's the strangest. It was so weird and interesting and different than anything I've read from Marvel in a while. I just needed to give it props. And I think there's no like, you don't have to commit to buying anymore because it's the last one. Go check this out. And then
it's funny because on the news of its cancellation, I'm seeing a lot of everybody slept and missed this.
I've read like half of them.
I tried to read the first issue. Couldn't even make it through.
I read probably 3 or 4 of them, and I might have checked out the other ones, but wasn't completely committed because, like I said, it's not fully my thing, but it was good. Does that make sense?
Sure.
But this one was really like they kind of threw everything in, and that's I noticed it, and then they talked about it in the end really quickly. It was kind of nuts. Great art. I just think, like, I don't know who the audience for this thing is.
Well, clearly there isn't because it got canceled.
Well, but that's
there's none. Yeah.
True.
Or at least on Marvel's level. At least on Marvel's level, there is none.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah, it's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Okay.
Next.
Yes. Next. Batman number 9, Tom King, and Michael Janin. This is the first issue Michael Janin's done, other than the Rebirth issue. I can't remember.
Possibly.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm almost sure.
I thought 3 points here. One, it looked great. I love Michael Janin's art. I think he really works with Tom King's style really well. It gives the book a different kind of feel. 2, Ron, Psycho Pirate, very heavily featured in this issue.
Yep, loved it. A lot of Psycho Pirate.
Great
Psycho Pirate bit.
And then the issue ends with Batman forming his own sort of twisted team, and it made me kind of miss the Batman and the Outsiders book because I liked that aspect of his character where he had this sort of side team full of, you know, misfits for his missions. And here he's gathering criminals from Arkham to help him, kind of like his own Suicide Squad. At the end, the reveal is that part of his team is Catwoman, who is of the new characterization where she's a crazy mass murdering mobster, which I don't like at all, but I like this issue a lot.
Even though her hands are all like tied up and she's under a face mask like Hannibal Lecter, her eyebrows are perfect.
Well,
she's very pretty.
Yeah. She has pride.
It was good.
It was very good.
It was good. I think it's going to go to an interesting place.
Yes. I like the art a lot. Continue.
All right, so I was just letting you finish it out there. I Hate Fairyland number 10, Scotty Young. It's the last issue of the second arc on this on his creator-owned book, and this is a great individual one-shot that plays with time travel and alternate realities a little bit. I'm amazed that he's able to keep this down to one issue. Basically, Gert, the main character, is presented with a pathway. One way she can get out of Fairyland. The other way will cause hell for Fairyland for a century. And then it jumps, and sure enough, she made the wrong decision. And we see what 100 years later looks like. And then her future self goes back in time to stop her from picking the wrong one. And of course, she screws up. But just how he did this in 20 pages is beyond, like, or 20 plus, or however many pages there were, just very, very impressive and funny along the way. And a character wearing a sword t-shirt, which is always fun to see because I like the band The Sword. But yeah, I Fairyland. Oh yeah, The Sword's great. You don't listen to The Sword? But yeah, great finish to the second arc, and I'm excited to see where he goes with the third arc. It's great to see that he's this little story that was originally supposed to be just 5 issues just seems to never be ending, and I love that he's doing it. Good job.
Speaking of last issues, The Astonishing Ant-Man number 13 from Nick Spencer and Brent Schoonover with Ramon Rosanas came out. I don't think I realized that this was the last issue, but I'm kind of glad it was, and not in the... Like, it was good, and I have been reading it since the last iteration all the way through, and I've been enjoying it, but I was like, I don't really want to read this forever. And so they kind of wrapped it up with a really sweet kind of ending focusing on sort of a version of Scott Lang that was definitely influenced, you know, by the movie, and I think done in a really good way. The good thing about that character in Marvel Land is that it's a little bit of a blank slate in that people kind of knew him, but I don't think anyone really cared.
Right.
But they can kind of shore him up into something that you know, that people like. And I think Nick Spencer did this. Nick Spencer's definitely, you know, from the Superior Foes of Spider-Man in through, you know, the Fix and this, he's come up with a formula for a way to do things. It's still pretty good. This was a really fun courtroom couple of issues and like everybody fighting with each other and then a resolution. So it was good. I'm glad I stuck with it, but also cool. Glad I don't have to read it for another 3 years.
Alrighty. Green Arrow number 9, Benjamin Percy and not Otto Schmidt, unfortunately, on art. Stephen Byrne comes back on art, who I do enjoy, Stephen Byrne, of all the artists that have been on this, just not as much as Schmidt. But to pick up on our speculation from the last time, the issue, Black Canary was not a dream, Josh. She was real. And if you ask me, they got off that island way too quick.
They don't like the island.
Right, no, but I thought we're going to have an arc on the island, and this is going to be a little bit of an adventure, but no, not so much.
Ask yourself, how did I... Oh, wait, Stephen Byrne, sorry. Yeah.
And luckily, you know, conveniently enough, there's a tunnel that goes from the island back to Seattle. Just,
well, that's
know,
much really like easy, the TV yeah. show.
Yeah.
Couldn't stay on that island ever.
Well, at least in the comic, it's more clear and obvious as to how they get back so quickly as opposed to the TV show, which is just...
a mess.
But anyway, so I just wanted to close the loop on that speculation from last time.
Trinity number 2. We liked the first issue. You guys liked the first issue a lot.
Yes.
A little
loved
more
it.
Than me, I think. And I really liked this issue because it was weird.
Yeah,
I liked this one less.
Me
yeah,
too.
But, I figured. Yeah. But I liked it because... Basically, they, you know, they went to another dimension, and it was a lot of, I mean, it was a lot of father stuff, I thought. And I really liked the tension of, like, Superman is really happy to see his father, but he can't say anything or talk about it or do anything. And they basically said, you know, that Jonathan Kent is the most important figure in his life, and he has this kid of his own now, and he can't talk to him about it at all. And I thought that was really interesting. Also, I'm super impressed with Francis Manapal doing literally everything on this book except lettering.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very impressive. Very impressive.
Yes, very impressive.
All right. So those are the books that we were interested in. And of course, every week, our supporting patrons who sign up over at patreon.com/ifanboy can pick a book for us to talk about on the show. And this week, the book that received the most votes was Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye, number 1. Which is the third book in the Young Animal imprint by Gerard
Feels
Way in DC,
right.
DC Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think third one. So this is Gerard Way and John Rivera writing on the story, and Michael Avon Oeming, who we're very familiar with from Powers and all the other great stuff he's done on art. Gentlemen, Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye.
This was an overwhelming choice. By the patrons.
The past couple of weeks, we've had neck and neck, you know, like a book won by one or whatever. This handily won this week.
It was interesting to me to see Oeming working with a different writer. We've seen his work where he's written it and drawn it himself, but to see a much less dynamic layouts from him because I guess the script called for it. So it felt like a very different kind of Oeming.
Yeah.
You know, you think of Oeming with Powers and it's crazy because Bendis writes these crazy page layouts and...
Yeah, I don't know if I would have been able to tell you that this was Oeming.
I don't think I could have either.
No, actually, it's funny because my argument was that I actually thought Oeming detracted from this a little bit and I would have liked to have seen a different artist on it as opposed to an artist that I already had so much of an association with. I think you're right, though, Connor, that it's a different kind of Oeming than what we, you know, like he approached it differently than he has Powers or the other books. And it's important to note that he's colored by Nick Filardi, who colors all his stuff. So it still had that. I feel like the total end result still, to me, I was able to identify as Oeming because I've read a lot of Oeming. But I like the concept of this character and I like some of the stuff that happened in here. I found myself wishing it was a new artist or a more frenetic or dynamic artist than an artist I already had a lot of association with, personally.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like the art in this.
Yeah. I didn't dislike it. I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah. No,
I'm just saying
no.
that like part of one of the reasons why I've liked Doom Patrol and I don't know, Shade the Changing Girl, we didn't talk about, but I enjoyed the art because I'm a big fan of Marlee Zarcone. I think I wish she did more, and I'm glad to see her on that. But I don't know. I just feel like I was like, oh, it's Oeming. Like that was kind of my response, which you know, which I guess is
I had
not
the
fair
opposite.
To him.
I was happy about that. I was like, oh, cool. But then I don't think I like these books.
No, I don't think you do either.
Yeah.
I think that it's like a, you know, it's it's a second-rate Grant Morrison kind of thing.
Yeah, a little bit.
And I really like the Umbrella Academy, but I don't know that I would like it today.
Well, no,
those were amazing artists on that. So.
Well, yeah, and I think you would like the Umbrella Academy today purely, you know, because of the artists, because of the brothers, Gabriel Ba, Fabio Moon working on it. But then also, I feel like the Umbrella Academy was something new, whereas these are Gerard Way doing his Umbrella Academy-esque approach with things that already exist. Like the Metal Men pop up in this and all, you know.
Yeah, I was surprised at how ingrained in the DC universe this was. I know the Vertigo wall is down, but they mentioned Krypton, and then Superman is mentioned, and the Metal Men show up, and then at the end, the big cliffhanger is that his buddy is Wild Dog, who I was very excited to see. A, he's been a character on the Arrow show this season, although he's a different person under the mask, but in the 90s, I was a big Wild Dog fan. Yeah. I read a lot, all of his books. There were not very many.
I did not know who Wild Dog was, and for a moment I thought it might be Dog the Welder, or Dog Welder. Yeah, yeah. So,
but are you not watching Arrow this season?
I am, but I'm behind.
He's wearing this outfit. Yes.
Oh wow! I saw the first character. That's Wild Dog. Oh, okay, cool. All right, there we go. So, I just made that connection. Thank you, Connor.
So let's take. I mean, obviously, you know, Gerard Way is a Grant Morrison acolyte.
Yes,
and not everything that Grant Morrison does is great.
Right.
So, you know, it's not a bad track record, really. That he's done one great thing and a couple of other things that were okay. But it's, you know, he's got a whole line of comics that he's in charge of, and he knows comics, sort of. It's a lot of things that he gets for being who he is, which it's fine. It goes with fame, and he's not like a complete neophyte to comics. But take away the rock star aspect, and anybody else with that sort of experience in comics wouldn't be eating a whole line.
Yeah.
So I hope they're selling. You know, like, I think he appreciates really good concepts. I think he understands good art. I like both of those things a lot. It's just that they're not for me so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that he's doing it. I like that he's doing something unique and different and all that sort of stuff. I am surprised, Connor, I agree with you, by how ingrained in DC it is. Also that there's cursing and things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm not loving it, but I'm liking it. So.
I thought this was the best of the books so far from Young Animal.
Yeah, yeah, Young Animal.
I thought Shade the Changing Girl was completely impenetrable. I thought this was weird, but excessively weird, and I thought Doom Patrol was in the middle.
Yeah.
I like this character a lot. I don't know anything about Kev Carson. The name sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't know anything.
I was going to ask, is it not something that
these are all established characters that they're doing.
Yep.
I mean, there's a little who's who for him in the back that I read.
Yeah.
After I read it, I was like, I'm not spending more time on this.
Yeah, so I actually really like this, and I'm looking forward to the next issue. Also, we didn't even mention the Tom Scioli Wonder Twins story in the back.
I think Tom Scioli is a crazy person, but letting him loose in the DC universe is fantastic, and I'm fully supportive of that. And that's the kind of thing, like, I wonder if I would have liked this more if someone like Tom Scioli or somebody out there was doing the art, as opposed to somebody who I feel is more grounded, like Oming. But that kind of helps illustrate kind of how I was feeling. But
remember when Oming was like, thought he was a really unique artist?
Yeah, yeah.
He was.
Long time ago.
He was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cave Carson has been around since 1960 as a character.
Ratings.
Ratings. I give it a 4.
3.
I give it a 3.
All right. Sticking with it?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
All right. Fair enough.
Cool.
Good. Thank you, patrons. So if you want to get on the vote action, you can go to patreon.com/iFanboy and sign up. And that's one of the ways you help support iFanboy. You can also go to iFanboy.com/support. There you'll find an Amazon link. That's how you can help the show by making Amazon purchases through that link, or just copy that link and make it your browser link. And you don't have to go to iFanboy.com/support. It takes one step out of the action. And that helps us keep the lights on, helps us pay the bills. And now that we have dumped all the shows onto our feed, the bills are a little bit bigger. So we appreciate everyone who helps us out. And also, as we said, patreon.com/iFanboy. That is where you can help us directly become a patron of the show. And you get all kinds of cool rewards. Ron's been mailing out packages full of comics for people, as well as fun perks like voting on the weekly book, as also the monthly hangout, which we did earlier this week. We did our monthly hangout with the patrons, and we argued about music, didn't we? We did.
We argued about
argue.
We discussed.
A spirited debate. I'm saying it was an angry argument, but it was a spirited debate about music.
You were opponents, not enemies.
Yeah. It was a debate on lots of things, but music was part of a big part of it. So that was a fun thing to do. So if you want to be involved in any of that stuff, patreon.com/ifanboy. Thanks everyone who supports the show.
Yes. All right. On to our emails. We got one email from a dear, dear listener. Josh H. from Australia writes in and says, I've been listening to the show since around episode 20-ish, and I'm currently on another re-listen. All right. Before I move on, I'm currently on another re-listen. Does that insinuate that he's re-listened to them all before?
Yes.
Yes.
So this is possibly his third time listening.
Yes.
That's a commitment.
That's a commitment. Thank you, Josh. Josh says, episode number 103 raises what I think is the first real in-depth discussion about the viability of marriages in comic books, specifically superhero comic books, and its liability to fail miserably. There's a lot of commas in his writing. As such, I can quite honestly say I've been thinking about this for around 9 years, almost exactly. As a Christian, I see marriage to be held as important, and therefore, whenever someone says that it's quote-unquote boring in stories, it upsets me. On the other hand, as a writer, you're each 100% correct that in nearly every instance we can think of, marriage and storytelling has resulted in boring and stale stories. It makes sense, then, that storytellers are so trigger-happy to break up a married couple, vows be damned. Over the decade you've been doing the show, oh God, your own relationship status has changed and matured, and maybe your view of marriage has as well. Has your unfortunate onward march towards old age, Jesus, affected your opinion on marriage in comics at all? Is there any hope for healthy marriages in comics or any medium for that matter? Surely we're just waiting for the right writer to actually commit to writing an interesting relationship, right?
I don't know that our feeling on marriage has changed, because marriage in real life is different than marriage in fiction.
Yes. Yeah, comics are not real.
No, and, but I think it, go ahead.
I think the timing of this email is interesting given what's going on in the Superman books where him and Lois are firmly married and they're just going with it, right?
Yeah, but in that, it's a different Superman. And I know that that shouldn't matter, but it kind of does.
Yeah.
I feel like it has to do with the conception of the character. And this is what Connor was saying about Spider-Man all those years. The conception of the character was as a young single person.
Yep.
And kind of a loser, young single person, not a guy married to a supermodel.
So putting that, turning that person into a married adult changes it. And the thing that you were interested in might not necessarily be there anymore. Now, that doesn't mean that those stories wouldn't be interesting. But mainstream superhero comic book is about the illusion of change and the continuance of the status quo. So you've changed that irrevocably when you change it. And therefore, the book is interesting in a different way and maybe not at all.
It's also they're also soap operas at their heart. And you, when you marry a character who has to be around for 40 more years, you take away stories involving relationships. And now you can counter that by saying, well, tell them sorry about the marriage, but that's not interesting to most people. Most people are not reading it to read about stories about married people.
Yeah, and what frustrates me about fictional episodic stories about married people, whether they be comics or television, is that stories about how happy they are get you know redundant very quickly. Stories about how normal it is to just be together, there's no action in there, and then you're just led to the inevitable story of one cheats or one there's infidelity or there's a problem or a breakup and all this sort of stuff. You know, I'm thinking about shows like The OC and 90210 and stuff like that I watch, and people, you know, soap operas, people are breaking up and getting back together because that's what interests us.
You have to do that.
However, I mean, if you conceive of a superhero comic that's also basically a family drama, say Parenthood, just as an example of a story that was about a marriage and what was hard about it and having them work, that's certainly possible.
But could you'd have to do Parenthood for 50 years without introducing some tension in the marriage. I mean, that's the even the Fantastic Four, the uber couple in comics, the married couple, broke up. I mean, there was Namor.
There's a massive backstory of that is that she's always on the verge of falling in love with whatever Namor is. I was going to say villain.
It's boring otherwise for 50 years.
Yeah.
It's just that's just fiction.
Yeah, I know that I don't. You know that show Divorce that just came out?
Yes.
I watched that.
I loved the first episode.
I watched two of them, and I just thought, I don't want to watch a couple fight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's not interesting to me at all.
It was hilarious. I will watch Thomas Hayden Church yell at anyone for any amount of time.
I can totally understand that. It's fine. I guess, but the point is, I think it has to do with the kind of story you're going to tell. And when we're talking about these mainstream superhero comics, that's not the kind of story that fits best with You could tell a 50-issue arc of something and have that be part of your story. But that's fair game. But that's not like you give Batman a wife, and that's going to make people like it's going to be interesting for 10 to 12 issues tops.
Right, because I don't want to read for 40 years about how Batman doesn't put the seat down.
Or he comes home late because he's crime fighting. It's just...
Right, exactly.
It's
when are you going to make this about us, Bruce?
Yeah. I don't know. I definitely think it's challenging, but it's nothing to do with my opinion of marriage in real life. Versus, I mean, it's fictional, so it's,
having been married for over a decade, you know, tell me about single Spider-Man. What's his life like?
And that's exactly why it's that way, because it's escapism.
Yeah. Yeah,
and married people don't necessarily want to read about other married couples, and young single people don't want to read about married couples. It's just not what sells units.
But it just depends on how it's presented, and I think in the format that these comics take, it doesn't jive so well.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you, Josh, for writing in. And if you've got a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Please keep it brief. Let us know where you're from, how long you thought about this, and keep it succinct. And of course, you can send in an MP3 or a wave of an audio question if you want us to play it on the show.
Correct.
Right on.
All right.
Now's the time for our favorite moment.
Every week, we like to give some of our patrons superpowers. That's one of the rewards for being a patron at patreon.com/ifanboy. Is we will thank you on the show and give you what is ostensibly a dumb superpower as a reward. So let's kick things off, Josh.
I live in like mortal fear that I'm going to start repeating myself.
Well, that's why they're written in the spreadsheet.
I know, but eventually it will be a lot, and I will forget, and I will just say it anyway. So Jor-El Robbins.
There's a autocorrect problem with his script this week. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. His power is that he knows exactly how far to fast forward into any program to get past the credits.
With any device?
Yeah, because a lot of the digital devices now, it's hard to pinpoint that exactly. But
what happens? What happens if
he hit that point?
What if he was born in 1644?
You never know. it's like
tragic.
Somebody who has a natural aptitude to be a computer programmer.
Yep.
You know, if they weren't born then.
Is it a muscle memory thing? Like he puts the button and it stops, or does he know in his head? Oh, you got to go to 243 to get past the credits.
Yeah, it's uncanny.
No, but which one is it? Can he just tell someone, oh, you got to fast forward to 156?
Yeah, he just knows. It's weird.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah. The Sopranos is 146.
Okay.
And it's only opening credits?
Yeah.
It's a long opening credits. He goes through the tunnel. It's great.
It's really long. And a lot of shows, they're going to shorten it. They don't do that on that show. Because now it's easy. Everything's like 12 seconds.
Right.
Because fuck you, that's why.
Right.
Yeah, it's not about cramming in more content, I can tell you that much. But the thing is that Jor-El is keenly aware of this, and it really bothers. Like, you think it bothers you, he sees it. He sees the math right in his head, and he's like, ugh, they're screwing us over here.
Like a beautiful mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thanks to Jack McGuigan. Is that G silent? McGuigan?
McGuigan.
McGuigan?
McGuigan.
Jack can shrink himself to 60% of his normal size.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not great.
Yeah.
He's not gonna get an arrow and get shot inside Darkseid, you know. But he can.
Yeah.
If there's like a small opening someone needs to get into, assuming a 60% size Jack can fit through it, then he can do that.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Good job. All right. Good tiny Jack. There you go.
Well, not tiny Jack. It's like, you know, a little more than half size Jack.
Smaller Jack.
Jack.
Okay, so Alexander Cox has got, again, it's one of those, the power on paper is telekinesis, but it's telekinesis with some restrictions. He can only move things with his mind if it's in the process of cleaning a room. So he can walk in a room and just Mary Poppins it.
Ooh.
And that room is clean.
I just love that this is just a window into our home, into our lives. What problems do we have right now? Right now. I want to know what Connor was trying to fit into that he came up with Jack.
Crawl space.
That's interesting. So he could lift the couch up to vacuum under it.
Oh, he doesn't have to lift it. Yeah, I mean, the couch.
He doesn't have to vacuum.
He lifts the couch, floats up, the vacuum comes over. It's all he's just standing there with his arms crossed. And he's
just move dust directly?
Well, no, he is the implements to clean the room. So he uses the broom to move the dust.
So what happens when he tries to move, say, a boulder that is falling on a person? Just nothing happens.
The person's
better
done.
Be a mess under that.
It better, yeah, there better be there better
like that person trapped under it. Better hope he dropped a Snickers wrapper.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then they're in business. Although, say the boulder falls on you, you are bloodied.
Then he can clean you up. Exactly.
Huh.
Oh, the irony.
I really like that.
He Mary Poppins it.
So finally, Adam Parisi. His left leg is 3 times stronger than normal.
Does that make him walk differently, or
it's a challenge? I mean, there's going to be use for this, but it's not easy.
Yeah.
So what happens if he just works out his right leg like crazy?
He won't ever get there. The other one will always be stronger.
Yeah.
It's part of his mutation.
Can he hop on the left leg, like, really high?
If he were to develop his balance in such a way that, but it's only 3 times stronger. He's not turning into the Hulk.
It's like triathlon.
Yeah. Guy goes through bike cranks like nobody's business.
What's a bike crank? I don't want to.
No, never mind.
Yeah, stop. Okay. So thank you very much to Jarrell, Jack, Alexander, and Adam for supporting iFanboy. Go to patreon.com/iFanboy where you can get your own dumb superpower by becoming a patron. All right. So now the part that nobody listens to. Josh, what do you got coming up?
They should listen to this because I spoke with Mark Russell, writer of Prez and the Flintstones. To which I immediately asked him, who are you and where did you come from? And he had an answer for that. And he was not offended by it because he understood perfectly well that he was nobody who came from nowhere to us, largely. But you should go listen to that. It was a great talk with a creator who was sort of thrust into making comic books and is doing it very well, despite those circumstances. Again, the Talksplodes are possible because of the patrons who donated at a certain level that we said we'd bring them back, and so we did. So we've got a couple of good creator interviews under our belt, and we'll have more on the way.
Yep, excellent. Yeah, it was great to hear the man behind the legend of the Flintstones.
Did you ask? I haven't listened yet. Did you ask him if DC knows about the Flintstones?
Yeah, I said, how is this happening? And he's like, I'm not sure.
That's awesome.
You do know, but I'm not sure that it goes past the editor. I think the editor's just pushing it all through. Yeah. Nope, Dan DiDio knows. He talked about. Basically, he did say, at some point, like he was talking to Dan DiDio, and he turned in something. Goes, this is too normal. Just do something else. He's like, you want me to just do whatever? And Dan was like, yeah,
that's great.
So no, that really it actually comes from the top.
Yep, it explains so much. Okay, so many of you have been patiently awaiting and asking us incessantly, but Luke Cage has been watched by all of us, and we will be recording the podcast about it, and you can expect it out this week, so look in your feed by middle of the week or so, and you will hear what we think of the latest Marvel Netflix series.
Yes, as you listen to this, we've already recorded it.
Yes.
So. It's in the future, but in the past.
It's coming.
And then in a couple of weeks past that, there'll be two new shows coming out. One, of course, Doctor Strange, the next Marvel Studios film, is coming out in 2 weeks. Yep. And we'll do a show on that as well. That same week is the release of Batman Return of the Caped Crusader, which is the surprise DC animated film that takes place in the 1966 universe, featuring the voices of those actors who are still with us. And the Animated Brain Trust is intent on doing a show about that. I just don't know when it'll come out. But those two shows will be coming at you in the month of November.
Ooh, exciting times for geeks.
Features William Shatner as the voice of Two-Face.
Nice.
Who was supposed to be in a third season of the show that never happened.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Well, you learn things in the animated Brain Trust shows, but I'm giving you a taste now.
All right. So come back for more. You can get all that on this feed that you're subscribed to, assuming you're subscribed to it via our RSS or podcasts app. Or you can go to iFanboy.com where you can get all those great shows as well as comment on this show and all the other great shows. Let people know what comics you like each week and what you think of TV shows and movies and all that fun stuff. It's all there waiting for you at iFanboy.com. And, of course, you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook at Facebook.com/iFanboy. Give us a like, why don't you? And if Twitter ever comes back up, I'm assuming by now it'll be back up. Hint just when we recorded. You can follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy, and you can follow us individually. Josh is at J.A. Flanagan, Connor's at C.S. Kilpatrick, and I am at RonXO.
And if you like this show, leave us a review in iTunes, even though we pretty much said don't use iTunes. So work that out.
We just said don't use the app.
No, We said don't use the Apple Podcast app. If you use iTunes, iTunes still works fine.
iTunes is great.
Well, better yet, don't ruin my joke. It's fine. You know, it's better that you ruin my joke. Or better yet still, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Spread all of the iFanboy word that you can amongst your various social network channels. And that is it.
We can't have you spreading misinformation, Josh.
Yeah, I know.
Even for a joke.
That's true. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I could spread information while running for office, but not for a joke.
Not for a joke.
A joke.
That's where I draw the line.
So. You guys should get these glasses. That's what I think.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Comes with a nice cloth, a hard case. I'm all in. I'm Josh.
Glasses.